Welcome to the Broadway Radio Show. I'm Donald Feltham, and I am very happy to welcome back Kristen Stoltz-Presley. Hi, Kristen.
Hey there. I'm so glad to be back. Thank you for having me.
Yes. Well, Happy New Year, and I hope you had a wonderful holiday season.
Yes, and to you as well.
Those of you who are avid listeners to the Broadway Radio Show will remember that Kristen was on a couple of months ago. She was on twice to talk about her two books that she has written for the Bloomsbury Essential Musical Series. She was on for Pulitzer Prize winning musicals and jukebox musicals. Congratulations on those, both of those books. I hope our listeners purchased them as wonderful holiday gifts.
I hope so too.
Yes. I hope people are have been enjoying reading those two wonderful books. But Kristen is back because she took what I'm starting to call the Broadway Radio Show Challenge, which is to put together her list of her 12 favorite show tunes. People, when I give them the assignment, they go, oh, this will be fun. And then it becomes a bit of a challenge for some people.
I think challenge is the perfect word for this project.
Yes. They always usually go in with like a really happy, gleeful, like, oh, this will be fun. And then I usually get an email back going, this is hard.
That is exactly the arc I went through.
It's hard to narrow it down to 12. And I had a list of 12 yesterday, but now my list of 12 has changed.
Well, as soon as I emailed you my list of 12, I thought, oh my gosh, I left this out. I left that out.
I know.
And I was like, I finally had to just draw the line and say, it is what it is. These are not the only show tunes that I love. These are the 12 that at that moment in time were the top of the list. So we're going to go with it.
Yeah.
And just beg the indulgence of all the shows and songs and songwriters that I left out.
Right. And for listeners who don't know why I do this, I do it for a couple of reasons. One is that it's fun to bring people back who have been on the show for other reasons, whether they're promoting a book like Kristen or they're promoting an album. It's fun to bring them back so they can come back and we can talk about their book or their album. But it also gives listeners a chance to get to know people because when you present your list of 12 favorite show tunes, it kind of reveals a little bit about who you are and what kind of musicals you like, what kind of show tunes you like. And sometimes the guest learns something about themselves. Mm-hmm. I tell the story, and I will not reveal names, but I had a musical theater performer, a woman, who came on and did her 12 favorite show tunes. And we got about halfway through the list, and she stopped because she realized as we were going through them that almost her entire list were made up of very sad torch songs about losing love. She said, oh my God, what is this list of songs saying about me? How horribly sad am I?
Yes, that all these totally are like torch that, songs. I had to fight that impulse too. I can feel her pain. No doubt about it.
Anyway, so Kristen is going to share her 12 favorite show tunes. And where are we going to start?
Well, first of all, I have to say, this was, though daunting and though indeed a challenge, it was a lot of fun because I was able to go through lists and lists of songs and pull out which ones were the most meaningful and why are they so meaningful? Why did this song resonate with me? And 9 times out of 10, it had nothing to do with the show and everything to do with the moment in time that I heard this song and the way that it applied to my life. So you're right when you say you're going to learn a lot about the person who's giving this list, because I feel like in a lot of ways, this is so autobiographical because it just goes through very specific moments in my life when these songs resonated. So the way that I have put these in order is by the year that they premiered on Broadway. You can tell I am a historian because I'm doing things chronologically.
Yes.
Now, there's a caveat here. I've got a few songs that are from revival productions. You're going to hear a revival the version from a revival, but I put it in terms of the chronology in the order of the year that show premiered first on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
It made sense to me. So
yeah. Yeah.
So we're going to start with a show or with a song called Exactly Like You. And this song is the perfect place to start for me. It was from a review that hit Broadway in 1930 called The International Review, with music by Jimmy McHugh and lyrics by Dorothy Fields. And Dorothy Fields, speaking of autobiography, part of my autobiography is that my first book was a biography of Dorothy Fields. And so I had started working on her as a master's student at the University of Kentucky, and then continued my work on her as a doctoral student at the University of Georgia, and then published a biography of her. But in the span of that 17 years worth of work on her life, I got married. And one of the things that I, you know, was looking for as I was getting married was a song for my future husband and I to dance to at our reception. And I found this song, which was completely unknown to me in spite of all the years I'd spent studying Dorothy's work. I found Exactly Like You. And we were, at the time, it doesn't seem old to many people in many cultures, but to us who grew up in the South, we were 34 when we got married, which was very old for Southerners. Mm-hmm. And so to have a song with a lyric like, I know why I've waited, know why I've been blue, prayed each night for someone exactly like you, it felt to me, and I'm getting teary-eyed just thinking about it. It felt to me like Dorothy Fields had written that song for me in 1930 before I ever met her in 2003 as a graduate student, or met her metaphorically speaking. And so Exactly Like You became our first dance at our wedding. Exactly Like You was written by Dorothy Fields and Jimmy McHugh. And I chose this particular version because we saw a friend of mine who was a choreographer to choreograph our first dance. And this was the recording that we would listen to as we practiced our first dance. So here you have Exactly Like You by Dorothy Fields and Jimmy McHugh from the International Review. And this particular performance is Carmen McRae from her 1957 album Afterglow.
Each night for someone exactly like you. Why do we spend money on a show or two? No one does those love scenes exactly like you. You make me feel so grand. I wanna hand the world to you. You seem to understand each foolish little scheme. I'm scheming and the dreams I'm dreaming. And I know why my mother taught me to be true. She meant me for someone exactly like you.
Well, I wasn't surprised that you picked a Dorothy Fields song.
I should hope not.
Yeah, because of the biography you wrote about Dorothy Fields, who, if you have not read about Dorothy Fields, I highly recommend you pick up Kristen's book. Because Dorothy Fields, one of the greatest, I mean, male or female, greatest lyricists in musical theater history, and one of the longest careers.
Yep.
I mean, like 50 years.
50 years. She was writing from the mid-20s to the mid-70s when she died. Suddenly and unexpectedly. But she was informed the day that she died that she was nominated for a Tony Award for Seesaw. So she was not only writing, but writing at the top of her game.
Yeah, it's just amazing. And I liked what you said about how you felt as though the song had been written specifically for you. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people can say that about a lot of Dorothy Field's lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
That's why mm-hmm. she was so good, is because her lyrics really speak to people. Mm-hmm. And it always did.
Well, what she was able to do was she could write like people talked, right?
Yeah.
And so it wasn't, you know, I love Cole Porter's lyrics, but nobody talks like Cole Porter wrote. Now, I think his lyrics are pure poetry. But
yeah.
That's not the way people talk.
Right.
In fact, I've got some Cole Porter on here, so I am a huge fan. But Dorothy was able to capture the idioms of the day, the slang. That's why she's writing, "Hey, Big Spender, spend mm-hmm. a little time with me," in the mid-60s, right? She just was able to capture the way that the characters talked, and it definitely set her work apart from the work of many others.
Yes. And that takes us to the next song.
Yeah.
So what is next?
The next song, this one is from 1930. It was a Cole Porter musical mm-hmm. called The New Yorkers. But the way that I encountered this song was as a high school, probably freshman or sophomore. I was very into Diane Keaton. Rest in peace. I know we've just recently lost her, and what a loss it was. But I was very into Diane Keaton, and she was in a movie, another Woody Allen film. Of course, she had a very long professional relationship with him. And I would watch this movie, Manhattan Murder Mystery, it was called.
Oh, I love that movie.
Love that
so
movie.
So funny, because it was sort of reuniting them, because they hadn't done movies together for a while.
Yeah.
And they did this, and it was a funny movie.
Oh, my gosh.
And
I
also,
love
but
that
also
movie.
A really good murder mystery.
So good. So good. Yeah. It starred Alan Alda mm-hmm. and Angelica Houston. I mean, it just had a great cast. Joy Behar was in it. It was such a great movie. But, you know, again, I grew up in South Carolina, originally from Kentucky, grew up in South Carolina. And so for a kid who's living in South Carolina to watch Manhattan Murder Mystery by Woody Allen with Diane Keaton, it felt so urbane. Mm-hmm. I felt so sophisticated that was the movie that when I went to bed every night, I had one of those giant TVs that had the VCR attached to it, probably weighed 7,000 pounds, but it was that one big unit. And I would pop in that VCR cassette of Manhattan Murder Mystery every night and watch it before bed. And I loved it. And the opening number, as the characters played by Woody Allen and Diane Keaton are leaving a hockey game at Madison Square Garden, this music is playing, "I Happen to Like New York." And it was so sophisticated to me. And it was just a world that I was not privy to growing up in the South, and it exposed me to things that, you know, I wanted my life to look like. And so I love this song. It takes me back to that very sweet moment in my life when I was dreaming of becoming a sophisticate. So now I give you "I Happen to Like New York," performed by the inimitable Bobby Short, live at the Cafe Carlyle.
I happen to like New York. I happen to like this town. I like the city air, I like to drink of it. The more I know New York, the more I think of it. I like the sight and the sound and even the stink of it. I happen to like New York. I like to go to Battery Park and watch those liners booming in. I often ask myself, why should it be? They should come so far from across the sea. I suppose it's because they all agree with me. They happen to like New York. On Sunday afternoon, I took a trip across to Hackensack. But when I gave Hackensack the once over, I took the next train back. I happen to like this bird. I happen to like this town. And when I have to give the world my last farewell and the undertaker starts to ring my funeral bell, I don't want to go to heaven, don't want to go to hell. I happen to like New York. I happen to love New York.
I can't think of anything more New York than listening to Bobby Short live at the Cafe Carlyle singing I Happen to Like New York from the musical The New Yorkers.
That's right. Exactly. And I mean, imagine you're this 15, 16-year-old kid in South Carolina who's got these dreams of New York and Broadway, and you hear that and you're watching Manhattan Murder Mystery, and mm-hmm. you just feel like, man, I have achieved something very special.
Right.
And so that song will forever mark that moment in time for me.
Yeah. And you have more Cole Porter coming up, right?
I do have more Cole Porter. I'm telling you, mm-hmm. I am a Cole Porter fanatic. In fact, when I started graduate school, I thought I would write about Cole Porter because I love his lyrics so much. And my advisor, who was very wise, Rhoda Gale Pollack at the University of Kentucky, said, no, you cannot write about Cole Porter because everyone has written about Cole Porter. And she was the one who really pushed me to find someone that no one had written about. Mm-hmm. And I am so thankful that she did, because, of course, that led me to Dorothy. Mm-hmm. And that was a very meaningful relationship for me. So I appreciate that. But nevertheless, I'm a huge Cole Porter fan. And this next one comes from Anything Goes, which premiered on Broadway in 1934. But what you're going to hear is from the 1987 revival recording. And the reason I'm going with that one is this is very near and dear to my heart. The man who sings opposite Patti LuPone as Reno Sweeney is a man named Bill McCutcheon as Moonface Martin. And Bill McCutcheon was a friend of my grandfather's. They grew up together in Russell, Kentucky.
Oh.
Yes. And I never knew anything about Bill McCutcheon until my grandfather passed away in 1985. This show, of course, hits Broadway in 1987. My dad is in New York for business and goes to see it. And then he comes home and tells us about it. And of course, I am consumed with it, because through singing along with this album, I felt like I was singing along with Bill McCutcheon. And through touching Bill McCutcheon, I felt like I was touching my grandfather, who had recently died. And so mm-hmm. this song will forever be so meaningful. Subsequently, I got to meet Bill. He was so dear. He lived in New Jersey and was so kind to let me. He won a Tony Award for this performance. So mm-hmm. he was so kind to let this kind of Southern kid who's dreaming of New York and Tony Awards, he let me, be photographed with his Tony. And he gave me great advice. And I am so grateful to Bill McCutcheon. So this is forever a favorite. Friendship from Anything Goes. This, of course, is Patti LuPone as Reno Sweeney and Bill McCutcheon as Moonface Martin.
You know, Reno, we should have teamed up years ago.
We're two of a kind, all right.
Partners.
Through thick and thin.
Night or day.
Right or wrong.
If you're ever in a jam, here I am.
If you ever need a pal, I'm your gal.
If you ever feel so happy you land in jail, I'm your bail.
It's friendship, friendship, just the perfect friendship. When all our friendships have been forgot, ours will still be hot. A la 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 da dig dig dig.
If you're ever down a well, ring my bell.
If you ever catch on fire, send the wire.
If you ever lose your teeth when you're out to dine, borrow mine.
It's friendship, friendship, just a perfect friendship. When all our friendships have ceased to gel, ours will still be swell. La 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 la, hip hip hip.
If they ever black your eyes, put me wise.
If they ever cook your goose, turn me loose. If you ever lose your mind, I'll be kind.
If you ever lose your shirt, I'll be hurt.
If you're ever in a mill and get sawed in half, I won't laugh.
It's friendship, friendship, just a perfect friendship. When all our friendships have been forgot, ours will still be great.
Your throat, write a note.
If they ever make a cannibal stew of you, invite me to.
It's friendship, friendship, just a perfect plan.
quack, quack.
What do I look like, a duck?
I don't care what
I'm
you look like.
Just quack, quack. Think of something else. Whatever friendships have been forgotten, ours will still be on.
Quack, 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 quack.
We just heard from the 1987 Broadway revival of Cole Porter's Anything Goes. We heard Friendship, and we are chatting with Kristen Stultz-Presley, and she's doing her 12 favorite show tunes. We've heard her first three. And next up, we have one that I was surprised to see on your list.
Really?
I was. I don't think anybody's ever picked any. I don't think anybody's ever picked anything from this particular show.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I was surprised you picked this particular song. But I also was also thrilled that you picked this version, because I happen to really love this version of this song, because
I love
the new orchestrations for this.
Yeah.
Because I think it absolutely, I like this. I love the show and I love the score, but there is something about the orchestrations for this version.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to tell any more. I'm going to let you run with this one. So what is next?
So the next number is 6 months out of every year, which of course is the perfect opening number from Damn Yankees. Now, Damn Yankees premiered on Broadway in 1955, but this version is the 1994 revival company. Mm-hmm. And so this is, I saw this show on Broadway, and I was in high school at the time. We used to come to New York pretty frequently around the holidays, and we would often see shows on Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, and then that would kind of dictate what we saw when we came a few weeks later. My dad, like I said, was frequently in New York for business, and as time went by and we got older, he would often take us with him, and thank God for that, because it exposed me to so many shows that I wouldn't have seen otherwise. And so one of those shows that we saw was Damn Yankees. Of course, it starred at that time Victor Garber as Applegate, and it starred Bebe Neuwirth, though we saw, when we saw it the first time, Valerie Wright. She was an understudy for Bebe Neuwirth, and she was so great. She was fantastic. But this number, 6 months out of every year, sets the tone for this musical like I have never heard an opening number set the tone for a musical, right? It tells you everything that you need to know in terms of exposition about what this show is going to tell you, what it's about, what the conflict is. You know, it's just a brilliant opening number. And again, a very sweet time in my life when I was just beginning to go to New York and beginning to see shows. And not only did we see it at Christmas with my parents and my sister, but we went back the next year and took my grandmother. So I have a fond remembrance of being in the theater with my grandmother, who was a huge baseball fan, and of seeing this show with her. So I love it. 6 months out of every year. One of the primary vocalists on this number is a woman named Linda Stevens, and she plays Meg, who is one of the central characters. And I think she does a brilliant job. So here you have 6 months out of every year from the 1994 original Broadway company of Damn Yankees.
Good evening. Just past the midpoint of the 20th century, the average fan of the hapless Washington Senators felt this way about the legendary New York Yankees. So naturally, the wives felt this way about their husbands. And since the average Senator fan's conversation was usually limited to some variation of this, the average marriage around Washington worked something like this.
6 months out of every year, I might as well be made of stone. 6 months out of every year when I'm with him, I'm alone. 6 months out of every year, he doesn't take me anywhere. 6 months out of every year when I play cards, solitaire.
Come on, there!
The other 6 months out of every year, we are hardly ever seen apart. But then the Washington Senators take over my place in his heart. 6 months out of every year, I might as well be wearing crape. Life is just an awful war from which I find no escape.
6 months out of every.
We met in 1938. It was November.
When I said that I would be his mate, it was December.
So we are going to move from a big opening number featuring a big cast with a big brassy opening number to a very different kind of solo number, but also from a very brassy broad, mm-hmm. you could say. I think she would classify herself as a brassy broad.
Oh, she'd be thrilled.
Yes.
She'd be thrilled.
So what is next?
So next we have The Ladies Who Lunch, sung inimitably by Elaine Stritch in the 1970 original Broadway company of Company. Now, here's a little bit about this song. So again, I'm growing up in South Carolina and I'm obsessed with musicals. And I find out that one way, though I'm not able to see a whole lot in Greenville, South Carolina, I see some, but not a whole lot. I can listen to the cast recordings. And I find out that the Greenville County Library had an unbelievable collection, or at least unbelievable to me, collection of musical theaters CDs. And so I would go, I could get 10 at a time. And I would go, and boy, did I get as many as I could. Mm-hmm. And that enabled me to really learn. I think it's one of the reasons why I became a historian, because it exposed me to so much of the canon of musical theater that I never would have seen, that I never would have heard had I not had that accessible to me. And so one of those albums that I picked up that became absolutely one of my favorites was Company, the original Broadway recording of Company from 1970. And this, I will never forget, this song playing for the talk about never heard anything like this before. I mean, I had never heard a woman sing like this before. And I, as a, 18, 19-year-old kid, was completely transfixed. And then the cherry on top of this story is years later, my mother, who had, she lived in the house too, so she was hearing these CDs as well, bless her heart, because I did not play them quietly. We were in New York, my mom and dad and I, and mom was in the Starbucks on the bottom level of, I believe, the Marriott Marquis. Mm-hmm. And Elaine Stritch was in there. And my mother recognized her and stopped her and said, "Listen, my daughter would die to meet you. Would you wait until she and my husband come back?" I don't even remember where my dad and I had walked off to. But Elaine Stritch did it. Oh. And my mom kind of holds her captive in the Starbucks. And I come back and meet her. And, it was probably 1997 or 8. So it wasn't a time when we had cell phones to take pictures, but man, what I wouldn't give if I'd had a camera to snap a selfie with Elaine Stritch. But I still got to meet her, and I will never forget that moment. And I love this song, The Ladies Who Lunch, from Company.
I'd like to propose a toast. Here's to the ladies who lunch. Everybody laugh. Lounging in their caftans and planning a brunch on their own behalf. Off to the gym, then to a fitting, claiming their fat and looking grim, 'cause they've been sitting, choosing a hat. Does anyone still wear a hat? I'll drink to that. Here's to the girls who stay smart. Aren't they a gas? Rushing to their classes in optical art, wishing it would pass. Another long, exhausting day, another $1,000, a matinee, a pinter play, perhaps a piece of Mahler's. I'll drink to that. And one for Mahler. Here's to the girls who play wife. Aren't they too much? Keeping house but clutching a copy of Life just to keep in touch. The ones who follow the rules and meet themselves at the schools, too busy to know that they're fools. Aren't they a gem? I'll drink to them. Let's all drink to them. To the girls who just watch, aren't they the best? When they get depressed, it's a bottle of scotch plus a little jest. Another chance to disapprove, another brilliant singer, another reason not to move, another vodka. To the girls on the go, everybody tries. Look into their eyes and you'll see what they know. Everybody dies. A toast to that invincible bunch, the dinosaurs surviving the crunch. Let's hear it for the ladies who lunch. Everybody rise.
Probably one of the most legendary Broadway performances, not only on stage, but on recording. I mean,
no doubt.
And I'm sure you've watched the documentary.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. The original cast documentary about making the album. And
absolutely, I did. I listen, anything that I could learn about that show, I just loved it. Mm-hmm. And then 2005, they had the John Doyle revival, which
right.
was so different. And
right. With Raul Esparza.
Yes. Yeah. The music director for that show had gone to college with me, Mary Mitchell Campbell.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. She's subsequently
She's
gone
terrific.
On Tony nominated
yeah.
for many shows. But that one, it was so cool to kind of follow her as she continued her rise by way of that show, which I love so much.
And next up, we have a show with a really interesting history because for the longest time, it held the record for the longest time as the musical with the most Tony nominations with zero wins, mostly because of what it was up against its season. And it was always considered kind of a failed musical.
That's right.
But then it's now turned into a monster.
Yeah, a monster.
Basically.
Yeah, second longest running show in Broadway history.
And the longest running American musical.
That's right. That's
in
right.
history. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, so that, of course, is Chicago. This is, we both reach for the gun. I could have picked one of about six different numbers from this show. This show I saw just after it opened in November of 1996, the revival. Mm-hmm. And of course, it was the original production in 1975 that it ran for 2 years, which for any other musical would not have been a bad thing. But it was up against A Chorus Line when it premiered in 1975. And A Chorus Line, of course, eclipsed absolutely everything. But this revival, 1996, has more than made up for it, right? So this particular number, we both reached for the gun. I chose this number because I saw this as a college sophomore. And I was there because we had seen Bebe Neuwirth give a little preview of it on the July 4th Boston Pops at the Esplanade thing. Keith Lockhart, who at the time was the conductor of the Pops, had gone to my undergraduate university. So we always watched because we wanted to support him. And then she talked about this production that was coming to Broadway, had been at City Center and was coming to Broadway. And we, you know, I called the day tickets went on sale. I'll never forget somebody answering the phone saying, Richard Rodgers. And I got our tickets for four to see Chicago when we were there that year for Thanksgiving. And it was an experience like I have never had in the theater. I had never seen anything done like that. I mean, I was used to, kind of a narrative storytelling, proscenium style, all that. So to see something that was so out of the box in terms of what I had been exposed to at that time just changed my life. Also, of course, it had as Roxy Hart Anne Ryan King. And I was an Annie girl from way back in 1982, Annie film girl. So I loved the fact that I was able to see Grace Kelly, the woman I knew as Grace Kelly from the Annie film in Chicago. And I choose We Both Reach for the Gun just purely for the number of times I rode around in my car and tried to get the, oh, yes, oh, yes, oh, yes. They both just tried to get the rhythm right, you know, so I could sing along. Another fun fact about this one is I will never forget the day the cast album came out. I was in college and I had a break between my classes. I raced to Barnes & Noble in that break between my classes, bought the cast album, brought it and my giant boombox back to the theater department at Furman University, put it in the costume shop and was like, listen, y'all, we're listening to this for the rest of the day. You're going to love it. And so Chicago, the 1996 Broadway revival, will forever be one of my favorite shows. And We Both Reach for the Gun is one of my favorite numbers from that show.
Yeah. And it's interesting because that revival really changed everything for the trajectory of the show.
Yeah.
And it also meant that we got the movie version.
That's right.
I mean, I don't think we would have gotten the movie version if the revival hadn't been so successful.
No,
it's interesting. And the interesting thing is I got to see just a couple of years before the revival out here in the Los Angeles area, Long Beach Civic Light Opera did Chicago.
They did
Chicago with the original sets, the original costumes.
Wow.
The whole thing with Bebe Neuwirth as Velma. Juliet Prowse was Roxy. Gary Sandy was it was
KRP.
A full star cast. Yeah, it was
it
was an all star cast.
Yeah.
And that was just a couple of years before the Encores production. So I got to see Bebe as Velma and Juliet Prowse as Roxy in a full stage version that was a complete replica of the original Gwen Verdon, Che Rivera version. And then I got to see the Encores version just a couple of years later.
They're pretty drastically different.
They're very different. Yeah, because also the book was also edited down quite a bit.
Yeah.
To make it more of a concert type version.
Yeah.
So it was very, very different to see juxtaposed with each other what they had changed.
Oh, no question. That's
crazy. And how stripped down it had been.
Yeah.
So it was quite fascinating to watch how they had transformed it into what it is now, you know? So it's really fascinating. So here's James Naughton, Anne Rankin, Dee Sibella, and the cast of Chicago with We Both Reached for the Gun.
Mr. Flynn, the reporters are here.
Let him in, Butch. Okay, Roxy, act like a dummy. You sit on my lap and I'll do all the talking.
Mr. Billy Flynn sings the press conference rag. Notice how his mouth never moves. Almost.
Where'd you come from?
Mississippi.
And your parents?
Very wealthy.
Where are they now?
6 feet under.
But she was granted one more start.
The Convent of the Sacred Heart.
When'd you get here?
1920.
How old were you?
Don't remember.
Then what happened?
I met Amos and he stole my heart away. Convinced me to elope one day.
A convent girl, a runaway marriage. Oh, it's too terrible, you poor, poor dear.
Who's Fred Casely?
My ex-boyfriend.
Why'd you shoot him?
I was leaving.
Was he angry?
Like a madman. Still, I said, Fred, move along.
She knew that she was doing wrong.
Then describe it.
He came toward me
with a pistol
from my bureau.
Did you fight him?
Like a tiger.
He had strength and she had none.
And yet we both reach for the gun. Oh yes, oh yes, oh yes, we both, oh yes, we both, oh yes, we both reach for the gun, the gun, the gun, the gun. Oh yes, we both reach for the gun, for the gun.
Oh yes, oh yes, oh yes, they both, oh yes, they both, oh yes, they both reach for the gun, the gun, the gun, the gun. Oh yes, they both reach for the gun, for the gun.
Understandable, understandable. Yes, it's perfectly understandable. Comprehensible, comprehensible. Not a bit reprehensible. It's so defensible.
How you feeling?
Very frightened.
Are you sorry?
Are you kidding?
What's your statement?
All I'd say is, though my choo-choo jumped the track, I'd give my life to bring him back.
And
stay away from
what?
Jazz and liquor.
And
the men who
what?
Play for fun.
What?
That's the thought that
yeah.
came upon me
when
we both reached for the gun.
Understandable, understandable.
Yes, it's perfectly understandable. Comprehensible, comprehensible. Not a bit reprehensible. It's so defensible.
Oh yes, oh yes, oh yes, they both. Oh yes, they both. Oh yes, they both reach for.
Let me hear it.
So we're going to take a quick break. We're halfway through, but we're going to take a break because I want to talk to you about the Essential Musical Series, from Bloomsbury. As I said, when we started this show, this episode, Kristen has written a couple of books in the series. She wrote Jukebox Musicals and Pulitzer Prize-winning musicals, which she was on late last year, chatting about those two. And I understand you have committed to writing another one in the series. What are you working on now?
I have, and I'm very excited about it. And maybe if you hear some of my song titles that I've chosen already, it won't surprise you to hear that this is Golden Age Musicals is mm-hmm. what's coming next. And in fact, let me...
That's not easy, because it's... Well, you know, what are they defining Golden Age as?
Well, so that's a topic of discussion, of course, mm-hmm. that we had. And part of this series is... I sit down with a publisher and we really parse out what titles or what shows would work best in which category, right? Mm-hmm. So our goal is to cover as many shows as possible. And so how are we going to do that without overlapping?
Right, there's no duplicates, right?
Oklahoma 15 times, right?
Right. A show can't. The way it works is that a musical can't be in more than one book.
That's right. That's
right. So they can't duplicate, yeah.
That's right. And so we really have to be judicious as we're mapping things out. And it might be that something, for instance, we have a book called Hammerstein Musicals that we've put under contract. Mm-hmm. And we broke up Rodgers and Hammerstein. It would make right. sense to do Rodgers and Hammerstein together, but Rodgers did a whole lot of work before Hammerstein,
with heart.
As did yeah. Hammerstein. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we thought, you know what, let's split them up mm-hmm. And that will allow us to do a Rodgers volume where we talk about Rodgers and Hart and then talk about what Rodgers did after Hammerstein died with Sondheim, right. et cetera.
Right.
And the same with Hammerstein, where Hammerstein did a lot of work
with Jerome Kern.
Particularly Jerome Kern. That's yeah. right. And he wrote really important musicals like Showboat.
Sure. Exactly.
So
yeah.
by splitting them up, it enabled us to cast a wider net and to get mm-hmm. more shows. But I say all that to say, I'm starting with Oklahoma. So we had to have the conversation of, well, now, where does Oklahoma fit best? Would that be best in a Rodgers or a Hammerstein or a Golden Age? And ultimately, we decided I get Oklahoma because mm-hmm. Oklahoma is really what kicks off most agree on the start of the Golden Age of the American musical being Oklahoma.
Right.
What's trickier is getting people to agree on when the Golden Age ends.
Exactly.
Right?
yeah. Yeah.
And that makes sense because, you know, things in history don't just happen like a light switch, right?
Yeah.
Very rarely does that happen. It's kind of a slow roll.
Usually there's a marker when things, most people just agree. Yeah. But most people can agree when things start. There's sort of like,
that's right.
There's sort of like some event or some sort of landmark moment when
yeah.
things kind of start. But when things, and like you said, it's sort of like things sort of fade out a little bit.
Right.
It's not usually one definitive moment.
Right, 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 right. And so, you know, we talked through, I have always operated with kind of a very liberal timeline in terms of the Golden Age. I have always gone personally, and it's going to make the hair turn up on the heads of people, of many of your listeners, I'm sure. But I have always gone Oklahoma to Hare. Now, it's not that I say that everything up until Hare was a Golden Age. That's absolutely not true.
Right.
But it was Hare. If you try to go from major turning point musical with Oklahoma, the next major turning point musical was Hare, right? Mm-hmm. That's doing mm-hmm. something drastically different.
Right.
And so that's why I've always gone with that timeline. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of others wince, and I am not hard and fast. I can see the points of other historians and other theater lovers that take issue with that. And so for this, we are going with Oklahoma in 1943, and we're cutting it off at Fiddler on the Roof in 1964. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people want to point to Cabaret as that turning point musical, which was, I believe, mm-hmm. 1966, mid-60s. And so this kind of puts us on the inside, which I certainly would agree that that's not a Golden Age musical. That's doing something very different. And so that will be discussed in another, I believe that's in concept musicals. That will be in another edition of the Essential Series. But for our timeline for this book, it is 1943 Oklahoma to 1964 with Fiddler on the Roof. And I'm happy to share the shows if you would like to hear them.
If you're willing to share, I'm sure.
I am more than willing to share.
And also let people know that each book is limited to 10 musicals.
That's right.
And
that's
which makes it hard because you've got to narrow it down to 10.
It does make it hard. That started with the Pulitzer Prize winners, and it actually ended up being kind of serendipitous. There are 10 musicals that have won the Pulitzer Prize, and that was the first one that we wrote in the series. And so that set the tone. We have introduction, 10 chapters. Well, we don't even do a conclusion because we run out of words. We have 75,000 words. So we run out of room to do, you know, we'd rather give that to the meat of the chapters rather than and let people draw their own conclusions. Mm-hmm. So it's introduction plus 10 chapters. And that is, you know, that meets our 75,000 word quota. In fact, it sometimes goes a little bit over that. But yes, so it's 10 chapters. We picked 10 musicals, and a lot of the musicals that some people might think, well, wait, what about this one? What about that one? Just trust that they're going to be in another volume.
Right,
for instance,
right.
South Pacific would, of course, be a Golden Age musical, but it's in Pulitzer Prize winners.
Right.
So it's we haven't forgotten the great musicals.
And
we're
something
just
like
filing them elsewhere.
Right. And same with like something like The King and I. I mean, things that,
they
will pop up elsewhere. So don't worry.
Exactly.
Don't worry.
Just stick with us. We did not forget them. We're just trying to be as judicious as we can and filing them away.
And you also want to be, and you also want to spread the wealth so that you cover as many different composers and writers.
Absolutely.
So that you're covering a lot of different people.
Absolutely. And we want it to be from a lot of different voices who are writing these books. So
exactly. It's
not all me. We've got probably 8 other writers who are currently writing or are about to be under contract to write. So it is not just my series. It's a lot of other voices are weighing in as well.
Right.
And my job is really to work with the publisher to be sure that we're being judicious in how we divvy out each little sliver of the pie.
Yeah.
So the shows in Golden Age Musical will be Oklahoma, Annie Get Your Gun, Kiss Me, Kate, Guys and Dolls, Damn Yankees, My Fair Lady, The Music Man, Gypsy, Hello Dolly, and Fiddler on the Roof.
Those are all, you can't argue with any of those.
You can't. I know.
No.
I mean, it's like, fight me.
Right, exactly.
And we had to give up. West Side Story was in there, and we gave it up. I can't remember.
It's probably popping up somewhere else.
Yeah, it is popping up somewhere else, but I can't remember. Maybe we put it in dance musicals. I think we did because of the Jerome Robbins connection. We thought this is going to be an interesting, we can run with the Jerome Robbins angle. Mm-hmm. And so let's put that in dance musicals.
Right.
So there's a lot of decision making that goes into it. It's not just so cut and dry as I want these 10 and I want these 10. We really have to be very judicious about it. So those are the 10 that I've got for Golden Age. I am so excited. These are some of my favorite shows. There's a Dorothy Fields show, Annie Get Your Gun. There's a Cole Porter show, Kiss Me, Kate. I've already tipped my hand and said that I love Cole Porter. Damn Yankees, one of my top 3 favorite shows of all time. So I am really excited to dig into each of these.
That's terrific. So we have those to look forward to, plus some other titles, which I'm sure from some other authors, as you said.
Yeah.
So that's going to be fun.
Yeah.
Hopefully people have started their collection. There's 3 out already. As I said, you've got Pulitzer Prize winning musicals and Jukebox Musicals written by Kristen. And Rob Schneider wrote Queer Musicals. Rob was on the show also last year, which also is a fantastic book, a really fascinating read.
I learned so much from that one.
I mean, that book was so good. Absolutely good.
He really dug under some rocks and found some amazing information.
Yeah.
And I learned, I told him, I was like, Rob, man,
I know.
You have taught the teacher. This was so good.
He did too. I mean, when I interviewed him, he was like, he said the same thing. He said, some of these musicals, he goes, I didn't even know some stuff about these shows. He goes, I learned a lot when I was doing the research about these shows.
That's how it goes. That's always how it goes. No doubt.
So we're now going to start act two. Act two of Kristen's 12 favorite show tunes. And we're going to start act two with an actual ending number of
the
show.
Isn't that ironic?
I wasn't surprised that something from this show was on your list. It's one of my all-time favorite shows.
Is it really?
It really is. It is a show that I always one of the things I love about this show is did you see this show?
No, I didn't.
Oh,
I've never seen it.
I saw the original Broadway production and I saw the tour. I took my mom to the tour. And one of the things I love about this show, it's one of those shows that I love because it's the kind of show that the book is so good that you could literally remove every single song and play almost you could almost remove every single song from the show and it would still work because it's so damn funny.
That doesn't happen often.
That doesn't happen often. No. You could literally, I mean, you'd have to maybe pad it out a little bit because it would be a very short show, but it's the book is so funny and so good that it could work as a comedy.
Yeah.
So, and it is so overdue for a revival. I mean, we almost got a revival because right before pandemic, there was a big production in London of the show that got canceled because of the pandemic that I know that they were hoping to transfer to New York. But let's talk about what the next show is.
Yeah, let's talk about City of Angels. And this is one of those shows that, like I said, I've never seen, but it was one of those cast albums that I would listen to on repeat as a high school and college student, checking it out from the Greenville County Library as much as I could. And this number in particular, which is the epilogue, the theme from City of Angels, the reason I picked it is the lyric, because this lyric was so meaningful to me, kind of as a hype song. And you're actually going to hear this same pattern repeated, because I encountered this song just as I'm, you know, trying to decide what am I going to do with my life? Am I going to kind of take the, you know, the provincial way of doing things? Or am I going to pursue this passion that I have for theater and don't quite know what to do with? But this song was one of the songs, and there's a couple more in this next six that will do the same thing. This song was one of those songs that I would listen to the lyric and I would be like, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to do what I love. And so this is one of those songs that I will forever remember. The lyric starts off, you only go around once and then they tuck you in with a spade. You're either under the gun or unafraid. Any fool with a stand-in can sit back and survive. You better do your own stunts or spend a lifetime buried alive. And daggummit, I did not want to be buried alive. So let's hear Epilogue from City of Angels.
You only go around once, and then they tuck you in with a spade. You're either under the gun or unafraid. Any fool with a stand-in can sit back and survive. You better do your own stunts or spend a lifetime buried alive.
The great thing about City of Angels is it's so funny because Cy Coleman had such an amazing career.
Yeah.
And then you can't deny he has such an amazing career. And then he just hit the jackpot with City of Angels.
Yeah.
Because later in his career, because it is his sweet spot. He is an amazing jazz musician.
Yes.
And
exactly.
And this is what this is. It's 1940s. Jazz.
Yeah.
And it's perfect. Yeah. And he was matched up with a very young songwriter, a lyricist, David Zippel.
Oh,
and the two
David
were
Zippel's
a match made in heaven.
Yeah.
And it just is gangbusters. The whole score of City of Angels is just fantastic.
I totally agree.
But,
I mean,
the versatility is just amazing because it's just and one of the things I love about the whole thing is that as we know, City of Angels won the Tony Award for book and score and best musical that season for them. And then the very next season, Cy Coleman turns around and writes the score with Compton and Green for Will Rogers Follies.
Yeah.
And wins musical again.
Yeah.
In a whole totally different kind of score. Totally different kind of score.
What a talent.
To show you what an amazing talent Cy Coleman was. So
yeah, no question.
Yeah.
No question. And I have to say here, Dorothy Fields connected with Cy Coleman at what she thought her career was over. She was in her mid-60s. All of her collaborators, her brother, her prior collaborators, her brother co-wrote libretto with her, but her other frequent collaborators had died. She thought she was done. And then she runs into Cy Coleman at a cocktail party and is like, why don't, you know, they connect. And he's like in his 20s and she's in her mid 60s and they take off and do not only Sweet Charity, but also Seesaw, which though it's not very fondly remembered today, it was nominated for a Tony Award for Best Musical. It didn't win, but it was nevertheless nominated. And I think some of those lyrics are some of my favorite that Dorothy wrote for that show.
Yeah, just terrific.
So, yeah, Cy Coleman is great. All right, so next up, we're gonna change the mood a little bit here. I want to tell you about I don't know if anybody will remember when, before we had access to every song ever written at the palm of our hands on our phones, we would have to go places and buy them, right? And I remember one of my favorite things to do was when there would be a new release of an album, Barnes & Noble had like a listening station set up in the back.
I remember.
And they'd have the little headphones. And then and this album was one of those albums that I just went as a probably college, I think it was 97 this one came out. So I would have been a junior, sophomore, junior, depending on what time of year it came out. And I remember listening to it. And as soon as that first note, I won't even attempt to sing it because I would destroy it. But if you know, you know, if you have heard Audra McDonald's Way Back to Paradise CD and you know that opening number on that CD, then you know what I heard when I hit play on that CD at that listening station at the Barnes & Noble in Greenville, South Carolina. And so, of course, I go home with the CD. And as much as I loved that opening number, I found one that I loved even more. And it was called Stars and the Moon from Songs for a New World by Jason Robert Brown. And of course, Audra's goal with that album was to introduce writers who maybe weren't as well known to audiences. And so she certainly introduced me to Jason Robert Brown. And this song, I will forever love. Another one of those songs that's kind of a reminder to don't settle for less than your best. Don't settle for less than what you want. And it's a cautionary tale. And man, do I love Stars and the Moon by Audra McDonald from Songs for a New World on Audra's Way Back to Paradise album.
No traits of any value but his smile. I met a man who had no yearn or claim to fame, who was content to let life pass him for a while. And I was sure that all I ever wanted was a life like the movie stars led. And he kissed me and he said, I'll give you stars and the moon and a soul to guide you and a promise I'll never go. I'll give you hope to bring out all the life inside you and the strength that'll help you grow. I'll give you truth and a future that's 20 times better than any Hollywood plot. And I thought, you know, I'd rather have a yacht. With him. But I was sure that all I ever wanted was a life that was scripted and planned. And he said, but you do. you know, I'd rather have champagne. I met a man who had a fortune in the bank, who had retired at age 30, set for life. I met a man and didn't know which stars to thank, and then he asked one day if I would be his wife. And I looked up, and all I could think of was the life I had dreamt I would live. And I said to him, what will you give? I'll give you cars and a townhouse in Turtle Bay and a fur and a diamond ring. And we'll get married in Spain on my yacht today and honeymoon in Beijing. And you'll meet stars at the parties I throw at my villas in Nice and Paris in June. And I thought, okay. And I took a breath and I got my yacht. And the years went by. It never changed, and it never grew, and I never dreamed. And I woke one day, and I looked around, and I thought, my God, I'll never have the moon.
We just heard Audra McDonald with Stars and the Moon from Audra's album, Way Back to Paradise. And next up, we have another multiple Tony winner.
Yeah.
With a show that I saw. I have a little bit of a history with this show, and we can talk. Oh, I have got gossip about this show.
Ooh, I want to hear it because I had
friends, but I will tell you off mic. Because I can't share some of the stuff.
Oh,
because
good.
I had friends. I saw the production pre-Broadway in La Jolla.
Yeah.
So I had friends who were in that production who did not go to New York with it. So I saw all the goings ons that were going on when this person stepped from understudy to lead.
Uh-huh.
So yeah,
interesting. I will tell you all about it off mic.
Tell us about what your next song is.
Yes, my next song, of course, we're talking about Thoroughly Modern Millie.
Yes.
And Thoroughly Modern Millie toured through Atlanta, Georgia, where I was living after college in 2003, just before I left to go to Lexington, Kentucky for graduate school at the University of Kentucky. And, you know, I had left college and in spite of my hype songs telling me to pursue my theater dreams, I nevertheless needed insurance and a salary. And so I ended up in a corporate job for a couple of years. And at first I was writing theater reviews and I loved it, working for a newspaper. And it really formed a great foundation for what I'm doing now. But then after 2 years of that, I ended up in a corporate job that I didn't love. And I knew that I wanted to go back to school and get, advanced degrees in theater. And so this show toured through Atlanta. I saw it. And this number, because of the lyrics, became another of those hype songs. And when I would be driving around Lexington just after I moved there and kind of thinking, what have I done? I don't have insurance. I don't, what have I done? It was in a lot of ways the happiest time of my life to be pursuing my dream, but at the same time terrifying because I didn't have a salary or insurance or all those things we're supposed to have as quote unquote grownups. But I would listen to this number from Thoroughly Modern Millie that I had seen on tour in Atlanta in 2003, just before moving to Lexington. And it would remind me to burn the bridge and bet the store because baby's coming home no more. Not for the life of me. Sing it, Sutton Foster.
I studied all the pictures in magazines and books. I memorized the subway map too. It's one block north to Macy's and two to Brothers Brooks. Manhattan, I prepared for you. You certainly are different from what they have back home, where nothing's over three stories high. And no one's in a hurry or wants to roam. But I do, though they wonder why. They said I would soon be good and lonely. They said I would sing the homesick blues. So I always have this ticket in my pocket, a ticket home in my pocket, to do with as I choose. Burn the bridge, bet the store, baby's coming home no more. Not for the life of me. Break the lock, post my bail, done my time, I'm out of jail. Not for the life of me. A life that's gotta be more than a one-light town where the light is always red. Gotta be more than an old ghost town where the ghost ain't even dead. Clap your hands, just because. Don't you know that where I am ain't where I was? Not for the life of me. Bow-dow-dee-o. Not for the life of.
So what are we moving on to next?
So we're moving on to, again, we're switching gears from Millie and that rousing anthem to a sort of love song. And this song is from a show called Extraordinary Ordinary. And it is performed, this was actually performed, recorded rather, in 2005. So several years before that show was even fully complete. Mm-hmm. But it was recorded by Jason Danielli and Maren Mazie. And you'll hear Maren Mazie on vocals here. And I think Maren Mazie's vocals is why I love this song so much. I was a ragtime girly from way back when, and in fact, I had to fight the impulse to put Maren Mazie's Back to Before from the ragtime original Broadway company on here, and I decided to go with this one just to change the mood a little bit, but also just because I love the lyric, and I love the fact that we sometimes fall in love with people who other people don't see as lovely as we do, and yet mm-hmm. we love them for different reasons, even if they're a mess and they never make the bed, as the lyric in this song goes. So I give you now A Sort of Love Song, performed by Maren Mazie.
You're a mess. You never make the bed. You don't read. You'd rather watch cartoons instead. You eat beef jerky. Think hockey games are fun. Wait, I've just begun. I'm afraid you're anything but neat. Your whole life is piled up in your car's back seat. You own a chainsaw. Your clothes, they never match. Goodness, what a catch. My friends all say I'm crazy. They'll tell me you're no good. And I'll be damned if you don't make me feel the way I didn't know I could. It's your smile, the devil in your eye. How you're strong one minute, the next soft and shy. Your little dimple, those great big clumsy feet. God, you're just so sweet. Logic says to run now, play it smart, don't be misled. But for once I'm following my heart and not my head. So here goes, maybe I'm a chump. I'll just close my eyes, then count to 10 and jump and pray you catch me. I've been dropped before, but I've learned that love's a gamble. There's a chance that I may fall, and although it's scary, I'm gonna risk it all. It's one big crapshoot, no signs to lead the way. I'll take
day to day. So you're a mess, I guess that's pretty clear. But my life would really suck if you weren't here, so call me crazy. But what else can I do? I'm in love with self-conflicted, rarely dressed up, sports addicted, sort of messed up, perfect you.
That's such a great song, and I'm really glad you included that on the list. So
love it.
Yeah, I saw Maren first in Passion.
Oh wow! Yeah, yeah. I remember
and
that
I was
one.
Yeah, and I remember immediately thinking, wow, who is she? I mean, yes. she was playing Clara, and
yes,
even though the main attraction was Donna Murphy, it was sort of like
that's right.
When you're sharing the stage with Donna Murphy, you need to be able to.
Hold your own.
And she was able to hold her own, which is hard, not easy to do, but she was a definite presence on stage.
Oh, I mean, and
definite
what a
presence
voice.
On stage. And a gorgeous voice.
A voice.
Yeah.
I mean, I love that voice so much. And when she is one who has gone too soon and she is deeply missed by the Broadway community.
So we have two more to go. And where are we now?
Well, it feels a little cliche to have a song from Hamilton on this list, but I've talked about a couple of my hype songs already in this half, so I've got to include My Shot from Hamilton. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is that came along at a moment in my life and career where I was ready to just quit. I was ready to just be like, I have these two little babies at home. I had little boys when that show premiered. And I still have little boys. They're just bigger boys now.
Yes.
But they're still around. But, you know, I just thought, man, this is hard trying to keep all this up and do all this work and keep up with them and all those things. And I was ready to kind of lay down my head and dream, as the Violet lyric goes. And then I heard My Shot. And suddenly I was energized to keep fighting. And in particular, with regards to my work on Dorothy Fields, I felt like nobody wanted to hear what I had to say about Dorothy. And then when I heard I Am Not Throwing Away My Shot, I thought, you know what? Dorothy Fields is my shot, and I am going to take my shot. And so courtesy of the original Broadway company of Hamilton, I give you My Shot.
I am not throwing away my shot. I am not throwing away my shot. Hey, yo, I'm just like my country. I'm young, scrappy, and hungry, and I'm not throwing away my shot. I'ma get a scholarship to King's College. I probably shouldn't brag, but dag, I'm amazed and astonished. The problem is a lot of brains, but no polish. I gotta holler just to be heard with every word. I drop knowledge. I'm a diamond in the rough. A shining piece of coal, trying to reach my goal. My power of speech, unimpeachable. Only 19, but my mind is older. These New York City streets get colder. I shoulder every burden, every disadvantage I've learned to manage. I don't have a gun to brandish. I walk these streets famished. The plan is to fan this spark into a flame. But damn, it's getting dark, so let me spell out the name. I am the A-L-E-X-A-N-D-E-R. We are meant to be a colony that runs independently. Meanwhile, Britain keeps shitting on us endlessly. Essentially, they tax us relentlessly. Then King George turns around, runs a spending spree. He ain't never gonna set his descendants free. So there will be a revolution in this century. Enter me,
he says in parentheses.
Don't be shocked when your history book mentions me. I will lay down my life if it sets us free. Eventually, you'll see my ascendancy. And I am not thrown away my shot. I am not thrown away my shot. Hey, yo, I'm just like my country. I'm young, scrappy, and hungry, and I'm not throwing away my shot. I am not throwing away my shot. I am not throwing away my shot. Hey, yo, I'm just like my country. I'm young, scrappy, and hungry, and I'm not throwing away my shot. It's time to take a shot.
I
I dream of life without a monarchy. The unrest in France will lead to anarchy. Anarchy, how you say? How you say? Oh, anarchy. When I fight, I make the other side panicky with my
shit. Yo, I'm a tailor's apprentice, and I got y'all knuckleheads and local parentis. I'm joining the rebellion, cause I know it's my chance to socially advance. Instead of sewing some pants, I'm gonna take a shit.
And but we'll never be truly free until those in bondage have the same rights as you and me. Right. You and I do or die. Woo. Wait till I sally in on a stallion with the first black battalion. Never another shot.
Geniuses, lower your voices. You keep out of trouble and you double your choices. I'm with you, but the situation is fraught. You've got to be carefully taught. If you talk, you're gonna get shot.
Bird, check what we got. Mr. Lafayette, hard rock like Lancelot. I think your pants look hot. Lawrence, I like you a lot. Let's hatch a plot blacker than the kettle calling the pot. What are the odds that God will put us all in one spot? Popping a squad in conventional wisdom like it or not. A bunch of revolutionary manumission abolitionists. Give me a position, show me where the ammunition is.
Oh, am I talking too loud? Sometimes I get overexcited, shoot off at the mouth. I never had a group of friends before. I promise that I'll make y'all proud.
Let's get this guy in front of a crowd.
I am not throwing away my shot. I am not throwing away my shot. Hey, yo, I'm just like my country. I'm young, scrappy, and hungry, and I'm not throwing away my shot. I am not throwing away my shot. I am not throwing away my shot. Hey, yo, I'm just like my country. I'm young, scrappy.
Imagine death so much it feels more like a memory. When's it gonna get me? In my sleep, 7 feet ahead of me. If I see it coming, do I run or do I let it be? Is it like a beat without a melody? See, I never thought I'd live past 20. Where I come from, some get half as many. Ask anybody why we live it fast and we laugh, reach for a flask. We have to make this moment last. That's plenty. Scratch that. This is not a moment, it's the movement. Where all the hungriest brothers with something to prove went. Foes oppose us. We take an honest stand. We roll like Moses, claiming our promised land. And if we win our independence, is that a guarantee of freedom for our descendants? Or will the blood we shed begin an endless cycle of vengeance and death with no defendants? I know the action in the street is exciting, but Jesus, between all the bleeding and fighting, I've been reading and writing. We need to handle our financial situation. Are we a nation of states? What's the state of our nation? I'm past patiently waiting. I'm passionately smashing every expectation. Every action's an act of creation. I'm laughing in the face of casualties and sorrow. For the first time, I'm thinking past tomorrow.
And I am not throwing away my shot. I am not throwing away my shot. Ayo, I'm just like my country. I'm young, scrappy, and hungry. And I'm not throwing away my shot. We gonna rise up.
We are with Kristen Stultz Presley, who has written a couple of books in the Essential Musicals series from Bloomsbury, and she's got another one coming out on Golden Age Musicals, and she's doing her 12 favorite show tunes, and we have one more to go. We've heard 11, and we've got number 12. They're not in any preferential order. They're in chronological order because
that's
she's
right.
A historian of musicals.
I am a historian.
So we're going in historical order. And this last one, I'm glad to see was on your list. I'm curious to hear why you picked it. It's from one of my favorite shows.
I love this show.
I love the show. And this is also, it's not the song from the show everybody focuses on.
Yeah.
But it's a song in the show that it's a closing number. So it's perfect where it's the
that
class number.
That is true. I didn't
it's the closing number.
Yeah.
But it's also, it's sort of like, it's like this huge emotional payoff in the show.
That's why I chose it, the emotional payoff.
It's the emotional payoff in the show. So tell us what this is.
This is Answer Me from the band's Visit.
Yeah.
This is the original Broadway company, 2017. Of course, Tony Award winner for Best Musical. That crescendo, when all of those voices on the stage, all of whom has been waiting or longing for something throughout the show, and then you hear all of their voices to crescendo towards the end of that number, that emotional, I mean, talk about catharsis, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it just is the most beautiful moment. I actually saw it in Greenville, South Carolina as it toured. It was in Atlanta not long after that. And I made my husband go with me to Atlanta so I could see that moment on stage again. I love this show. And I think it's very often looked over because it's not a big, brassy musical. It's just a beautiful, intimate story. And it is so beautifully and intimately told. And so Answer Me. And we all know what it's like to wait and to long.
Right.
And to, you know, for your ears be thirsty for the sound of someone's voice.
Right.
We all know that feeling.
Yeah.
And it's, so that it's the crescendo at the end is, for me, that's why I picked it.
It's the whole concept of reaching out and wanting someone to hear you and wanting them to reach back out to you. And the conceit in the show, for people who have not seen the show, is there's a character who's simply known as the telephone guy, I think is what he's known as. In the original production, it's Adam Cantor, who's like throughout the show, sort of a bit of it. And the funny part is what I like about the way the show is constructed is that he's almost set up in a comical way because he's constantly waiting by this phone booth or like a payphone, waiting for this woman to call him back. He's waiting for a call, and people are kind of joking about the fact or feeling bad for him or feeling sorry for him because they basically feel like she's never going to call. She's never going to call him.
Oh gosh,
she's never going to call him. And throughout the show, everyone is sort of like, it's all about human contact and human communication and making contact with other people. And it's set in a very remote little village, and it's about mixed cultures and people from different backgrounds and making that human contact that we also desperately need.
And how that's common to all of us, right?
And when the phone finally rings at the end, and he gets the phone call he's been waiting for, and he starts the song, and then the whole, you know, ensemble, you know, like you said, it builds, and it's just huge emotional impact.
Good.
Even for the audience, you can hear people crying.
I was weeping.
It's just a release because it's so, you're so happy for him, and you're so happy for everything that's been building
time,
up throughout the show.
You're seeing yourself in that. You're seeing your own yearnings and longings. I remember at the end of this show, I was sobbing so hard that I turned to the woman I had seen it with the first time and said, I just need to go somewhere and be alone. You know, like, because nobody should see me like this. I mean, it is such a cathartic moment. And that crescendo, when you hear it, if you haven't heard the song, when you hear the crescendo at the end or towards the end, you will know what I'm talking about. I think it's one of the most beautiful split seconds in musical theater history for me. I love that moment. And it is just that climax of all that longing, of all those people who have different longings, like we all have different longings, and yet we are common in that we are longing for something. And so now I give you Answer Me from the band's Visit.
My ears are thirsty.
Well, there you have it. We just had Kristen Stoltz-Presley give us her 12 favorite show tunes as of today.
That's right. As of 4 days ago when I sent the list.
Yes, yes. She'll be back tomorrow with 12 new ones.
That's right. The next 12.
Right, the next 12. She could do this every week and it'll be 12 new ones every week.
Just constant.
Yes, constant. Yes, it's which is why show tunes are so wonderful. They address every mood and everything that changes in your life.
And they articulate things that we don't even know that we're feeling, right? Like they help us to realize, oh my gosh, that's exactly what I would say if I could say it like that.
Right. And they also remind us of moments in our life when we first heard them, or experiences when we first saw the shows and what we were going through. And it changes all the time. Because every time I see a new show and have a new emotional experience at a show or feel a connection to a show or a performance or a particular song, it automatically gets put into my mental list.
Of course.
This is going in my mental playlist of my favorite show tunes. You know?
Absolutely.
It happens all the time. Well, congratulations again on the new book, Golden Age Musicals. You will have to definitely come back to talk about it when it comes out.
I would be delighted.
And I encourage people to check out the entire collection of Essential Musicals. There will be more than just Golden Age Musicals coming out. There's more editions coming out this year. So 2026 will be more in the series. So I encourage people to do
that. That's exactly right.
And they also need to check you out because your podcast, where can they find you?
Okay, so my website is drbroadway.com, drbroadway spelled out .com. You can find my podcast, which is the Dr. Broadway podcast, in which we do deep dives into the backstories of musicals. And I am chatting with another PhD theater historian, musical theater historian in that, my colleague Tracy Brent Chesham, who's also going to be writing an issue or an edition in the Essential series. She's writing Hammerstein musicals as well Disney musicals.
So those are coming. Nice.
Hot off the press. So you can find me, the Dr. Broadway podcast, rather. You can find Apple, Amazon, Spotify, YouTube. And then my social media is facebook.com/@DrBway. facebook.com/@DrBWayPodcast. And then Instagram is the same, @DrBWay and @DrBWayPodcast. And then I'm on TikTok as well, @DrBWayPodcast. I'm terrible at social media, but if you ever need to reach me, please send me an email via my website and I will respond right away.
Perfect. Well, Kristen, it's always a delight to chat with you.
So, yes, same. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on.